Hello and welcome to Dancing in the Discomfort Zone podcast, episode 224. I am your guest. No, I'm not your guest. I'm your host. I'm Ann Bonney. I own this joint. Thanks for coming. Hey, today I've got my awesome friend and mastermind partner, brilliant professional speaker, author, workshop facilitator, and just an all-around awesome person, Nicole Bianchi, author of Small Brave Moves. And as we think about dancing in the discomfort zone, really all it is a series of small brave moves and dancing like everybody's watching, which is why it's so scary. So I'm super excited to bring on Nicole today to think about, to talk a little bit about small brave moves and what courage means and how we can summon that courage when we need to, whether it's at work, at home, or in whatever situation we need. So without further ado, enjoy this episode of Dancing in the Discomfort Zone. All right, we are dancing in the discomfort zone today with Nicole Bianchi. Nicole, how are you over there dancing?
I am fabulous.
And you're in balmy Omaha, Nebraska, right?
Yes, it's a heat wave. It's 45 degrees here today.
Watch out. She's in a bikini right now, which, you know, I was tempted to put the video on, but we won't. So you're a speaker, you're an author, you're an entrepreneur, and you specialize in small brave moves to make better leadership. And so we're going to talk about that in a minute, but I read something about you that I want to start with because this sounds fascinating. You negotiated a legacy union contract that Jimmy Hoffa put together and you helped to make that go away. Talk to me about this. What was the context of having to do that? And what was he still around at the time?
No, he was long gone, but let me tell you the legacy that the Teamsters hold on to, right? He is still a very powerful human being. And so what was so crazy about this is it was a double union contract. So it was half Teamsters, half UFCW, and they despise each other. Oh. So here we are tasked with get in there, break this contract of the beloved Teamsters Hoffa gentleman. And by the way, don't piss off the UFCW. And by the way, we want to sell a couple of these plants when you're done doing all of that. So go make that happen.
What was your job role company? Where did you work at the time that you got to do this?
I was at Conagra Brands, and it was a huge opportunity to go in. I mean, that was their number one master contract of the entire company, which sent me on the road for weeks and months at the time, having to play a very interesting role earlier. I mean, this is still fairly early on in my career, where literally I'm going to take you to one of our, we're in the caucus room having a conversation with the union, and the Teamsters gentleman looks at me after I ask a question and he takes his cigarette and flips it into my glass of water in this moment. And right, the look that you're giving me right now is the look that I had on my face. The learning and the growth and the development that happened in that, it was 9 months from beginning to end to break the contract. But I was placed into roles like that all the time at Conagra Foods, where it was like, this is broke, go fix it, go transform it, go make it better. Here's what we need to do. And we're going to send you to go figure out how to do that.
And that is what they call big, brave moves.
Yes.
Did he buy you a drink at the end? Because I bet knowing you, y'all became friends.
We absolutely became friends, but he had to let me know the pecking order, right? He had to let me know. And of course, there's so much posturing and game playing and let's meet at 2 a.m. to have a really big conversation on compensation. We're waking everybody up out of their dead sleep. I mean, the game, there's so much gamesmanship, strategy and gamesmanship. That's the part I loved, was the strategic moves to get what you need to have happen and how you map them out and how some go as planned and some don't.
Did you ever call a 2 a.m. meeting?
No, but I attended a 2 a.m. meeting.
Probably a 9
month. Oh, I attended. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So how did you end up going from there to where you are now as an entrepreneur running your own business? What moves did you make between them?
Yeah. So after about, 15 years doing that sort of thing between two different companies, transformation, get in there, fix it. I decided there were a lot of aspects of organizational development, organizational effectiveness, HR. There were aspects I loved. There were aspects I did not like the employee relations, the comp, the benefits. I wanted to get in there and figure out how to grow leaders to grow the business. And So that's where I was like, listen, that's the part I want to go do. So I'm going to take a leap. I'm going to jump out on my own and I'm going to do this. So I sent out to talk about the power of your circle and the power of your network to three coveted leaders that I just thought the world of and said, listen, I'm thinking about this. Here's, if you have a project, something I can jump into with you and kind of dabble on the side. And within minutes here's what I could use you for. Here's what we can pay. And I thought at first, okay, this is just gonna be free gig stuff, right? Like, let's just get out there and play in the sandbox with others. And they turned out to be paid large projects that then propelled me within about 6 months of leaving the corporate world and building a book of business so strong that it ended up kind of moving me into that full-on organizational development, leadership development, and executive coaching. And I never looked back after that. So it's been 11 years.
That's amazing. So such a great, story of like leap into that thing that's scary. Let's go make this happen. And then you got those little things that built your confidence and said, oh, wait a minute, I can do this like full-time making money. Like, let's go. And 11 years later, there you are in your posh mansion in, oh crap. I was supposed to come up with a really good, never mind. In Beverly Hills, that's an expensive place to live, right?
Yes.
90210.
Yeah.
Okay. So usually on this podcast, I focus on people's stories so that everybody there out there in the audience can take from their story what they will. But today I'd rather focus on your premise and the things that you teach and the way that you help people learn those small, brave moves to become better leaders. And again, as you're listening to this, if you are a manager, great. But if you don't manage people and your role isn't manager, I think Nicole will agree, and correct me if I'm wrong, you still can be a leader, whether it's in your organization, in your family, in your community, whatever. So as you're listening to this, don't think, oh, well, I don't manage any people, so this doesn't apply to me. Totally not the case, right?
Each one of us have the opportunity to be a leader in so many different roles that we play, right? Community, home, business. I mean, even if you're not directing people, you're leading and influencing others and projects and work all around you, for sure.
Okay, perfect. So just start with the premise of the work that you do. Start there.
So as I, inside the organizations that I was with and then outside the organizations, right, as a now running my business, I started seeing one common element. And the element was a lack of bravery in leaders. So we would get in, right, to these workshops or have the most powerful coaching conversations, agree on next steps, and then they'd go back and there was not a lot of action. And so what I realized was the common missing element was a lack of bravery and helping them. So I started going, okay, well, how do we, it's one thing to teach the skill, right, of leadership, the things that we need to do, but how do we move them into action? How do we get them brave enough to make those moves, to have the tough conversations, to call the timeouts, to confront the reality of what's facing them in those moments? And so that's when I began to play around with the concept of bravery plus leadership, which I call bravership, that it takes bravership and it actually creates a competitive advantage for leaders. It can help them grow influence. It can help them accomplish so much more and to manage their fears, right? To recognize when those fears are happening, what do you do about it? And then how do you lean into that? And because of that, I started focusing in on two key areas, which is how do I build frequency in the room with them so that I can build their confidence? Mm-hmm. So when they walk out, no matter what their environment, culture, experiences, their frequency has moved up considerably and I can get them into a more confident place. Thinking about, okay, in those moments, what is that one small brave move I need to make? And you deal a lot with change, right? And it's overwhelming and we make it to be something so much bigger than, and it is big, Mm-hmm. But how do we break it down so that it becomes digestible, small, and I can just get into some forward motion? Because I know one small brave move leads to another small brave move leads to another small brave move.
Yeah.
And so that's my challenge to leaders, is getting them thinking about that and managing the fears and then building some of the skill in action. The other thing I would mention is a lot of people think you're either born with bravery or you're not. And bravery is actually an acquired behavior and it takes practice. And so I get them practicing in a very experiential way. That again, going back to the frequency and confidence, if I can build the frequency quick, I can build confidence that propels them moving forward.
By frequency, do you just mean basically doing it over and over and realizing, oh, I survived that. I could probably do it again.
Yeah. It's kind of the like, hey, I didn't want to do it. I did it. Now I'm glad I did it. Right. It's kind of the evolution of that emotion. Like, oh, I really don't want to do it. And then they're like, oh, I did it. And I wasn't that bad at it. Oh, I was actually, now I'm really happy because I, you know, and then I'm noticing they recognize real time, their mastery as they're moving through the frequency pieces.
Which again, builds that confidence going into that tough thing outside of the training setting where you're like, oh crap, it's Tuesday at 4:45. I got to have a tough conversation with one of my employees. You can call back on that experience and say, all right, I've done this before. I'm terrified. I don't want to do this. And I think I got it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I even go a step further, which is like, how do you start those conversations? Cause that's where people get hung up. Like, I don't even know where to start. And they start, and three of the greatest fears that they have in having that conversation is, am I going to come across as unkind? You know, I'm fearing the conflict. Like, am I going to leave the relationship in a better place or a worse place by having this conversation? Or am I just going to kind of lean into the, I'm too busy and I can't have it cause I'm just too busy and I don't want to prep and go through. So you and I are both speakers and we have a rehearsal process that works. And similar to that, I pull that into tough conversations. What's your rehearsal process going to be? How are you going to master it so that you get ready? When you're ready, you're able to get in there and have a really meaningful conversation.
Yeah. In a way that the other person wants to participate.
Yeah. 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 So back to the starters set the stage. Cause I believe that's where most mistakes happen is like, especially if we start with the, you know, I really feel bad saying this to you, Anne, but, and you're like, wait, what kind of, that's no way to start a conversation.
Right.
So how do you start with, right? A clear, concise and caring opening statement that sets the stage for what needs to begin to unfold.
I love it. Do you have template's the wrong word, but you know, like kind of a framework for that opening statement?
I do. So I'll even pull back a step further before I get into that. The book I'm working on in 2023 is The 5 Tough Conversations for Exceptional Leadership. And my argument, and it's kind of progressive, right? Not all tough conversations are equal. Uh-huh. And so you have to start off with the first one is the, how do we work together, Anne? Like, what's going to be most important to you? What's going to be most important to me? A lot of times we have expectations of each other, but if we don't articulate them, then we let each other down. And so let's get clear on what that looks like. Mm-hmm. And it's the first one that everybody bypasses because we roll up our sleeves and we get down to work. We don't focus on the how. So that's the first tough conversation we have to master as leaders. The second one is the ask. Do I need to ask for permission, ask for help, ask for acknowledgement? And the ask, 73% of us don't ask for help in situations. And then it begins to spiral out of control.
Right.
The third one, what's going on? This is a, hey, I'm noticing something different with you, or I'm noticing something coming up in our relationship. I can't put my finger on it, but what's going on? Like, let's open this up and have a conversation. And then the fourth is being better, right? You're not at your best and I need you to be better, which isn't escalated, right? That's the fourth toughest. And then the final one is the moving on, which is, listen, this just, we have to acknowledge this isn't working and we have to figure out what's the path forward. And so my argument is if we get really good as leaders at how we work together, asking for what we need back and forth, and then the what's going on, which is, hey, something's just a little off. We're basically fine-tuning our relationship, right?
Yeah.
Through the series of those three conversations that we should have to spend a lot less time on the being better or the moving on conversations.
Well, exactly. So Well, and that's exactly right. Because if you had a bunch of meaningful conversations that were successful before the be better conversation, it's easy. It's like, hey, Nicole, why are you coming late to meetings? You got to get there on time. And Nicole's like, yes, oh my God. And she knows that I'm trying to help her be better because our past conversations have been caring and I want, we're on the same team and I believe in you and all of that stuff. So that get better conversation becomes a whole lot easier because it's not the first one and people don't already have their defenses up ready to, you know, feel like they're being attacked and have to either cry or run out of the room or punch you in the face, which we don't like.
We frown upon those.
Yes, exactly.
But you know how many leaders who start with the being better conversation, like that's the first conversation I'm going to have with you. I'm frustrated. I'm irritated. You're not meeting my expectations. Now I have to have the being better. But by the way, I bypassed the first three. So now it's really going to get awkward and there's going to be some hurt feelings.
Well, and the key thing to understand here from my point of view is that every one of these conversations, if we can have them well, builds the trust, builds the respect, and builds the belief that the other person has in that we have their best interest at heart. Like, I'm not here to attack you. I'm here to make, like, that we're both want to be successful together. And I love this order you have because that first conversation is, hey, what do you like in your manager? What works for you? How do you like to be communicated to? How do you like feedback? Like, what do you like? And let me tell you what I like. Let's come to an agreement. So we're already on the road to effectively communicating with each other. And you know, I care.
Yeah. And one of my favorite ones, you just highlighted three of my favorite openers. One additional one I'll throw in there is, hey, if you're seeing something that I'm not, can I trust that you're going to say something to me? So we're giving each other permission, right? And think about this. This can be an up, down, a side to side conversation. So manager to employee, employee to manager, peer to peer. I mean, this could be, I've had to have that conversation with my husband before.
Sure. Well, and perfect example, you, me and Pat in our mastermind group, we started with that conversation. How are we going to work together? What are our expectations of each other? So that we all knew and made sure we were on the same page that this group was going to be successful.
Yes. Huh. Yes.
Look what you did. Slick that ninja move right into our mastermind. She's like, I'm writing a book on this, kids. Get in line. I love it.
And you are all part of my testing.
She's rubbing her hands together in an evil manner. Well, and the other thing that comes up that you just brought up was the fact that as we have these conversations from the beginning that aren't addressing a problem, but just saying, hey, let's get on the same page. You're giving them permission to bring up be better to you. Like if something's going wrong, or if you're interrupting them in client meetings and it's, you know, getting in the way of their credibility or, you know, whatever, it gives them permission and the courage to have those conversations with you too, which puts you in a great place as a leader.
It does. It absolutely. It doesn't, not everything falls then on the leader's shoulders, right? There's a little bit of accountability both sides. So what's interesting, I took this model to GE Power earlier this month and did a speaking gig on it with them. And then went in and kind of asked them, I was like, what do you think? Talk to me about the framework, talk to me about the model. And they challenged me to go bigger with it, which I thought was really interesting. So they said, why wouldn't you share that framework, which I have a great visual on. Why wouldn't you share that framework with teams to say, hey, you're the leader saying this to your team. We have to get really good at these three conversations so we don't have to have the fourth and fifth. And let's just be transparent. Let's be radically transparent with it. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about what those, let's share the conversation starters so that it can go both ways. Right. And I thought, oh, wow. I wasn't even thinking big enough about it. It was a nice push. It was a small, brave move on their part to say, you need to go bigger. I loved it.
Yeah. I love it. Well, and again, you're empowering your teams and you're flattening out that organization structure with Gen Z, with millennials. They have an expectation of less, just listen to me because I'm the boss. And so now you're shifting the dynamic to be, hey, we are all intelligent professionals here to do a good job. You've got value. I've got value. Let's work together. Mm-hmm. Oh, hallelujah. Oh, I love it. Well, and again, if you're doing this, I'm so excited. Like, I'm like, oh my God, this is so cool. Now I can, but if you nail those first three conversations, the fourth one, the be better one, doesn't even take any bravery really, because you know, you and your team have a great rapport and trust. And again, whether it's your team at work or your team at home or your neighborhood community, I just joined my community association here and I'm online dating. Like, so I'm thinking about this in terms of like, once a guy get past the third or fourth date, starting to say, okay, cool, let's talk about how we can work together effectively. So that, you know, like, this is brilliant.
Oh, I did the how we're going to work with my husband. Remember when we went on the 6-week, that was the beginning of starting the book.
Yeah.
And here we are with 28, the first part of our trip, we're with 28 people. We know some of them, we don't know all of them. And all of a sudden we kind of start getting pulled in all these different directions. Like, hey, we saved beach chairs over here for you. No, we've got pool chairs over here for you. And all right, we're kind of getting pulled in different directions, all amazing people, well-intended. And all of a sudden I noticed Dave and I start kind of like nipping at each other a little bit. And I'm like, okay, something, I kind of started at the, what's going on? Like, what's going on? And he's like, listen, I feel like we're not getting any alone time. We're kind of being pulled in all these directions. Like, how do we make choices? We don't want to hurt people's feelings. And so then we went back to the, how do we want to do this? What do you want, Dave? What do I want? And then what's going to, you know, and then let's do that. And then the rest will fall into place. And then it became like, we took back control of the situation and we were clear. And as long as we were clear and we were good and we both got what we wanted out of it, I knew the rest was going to be fine. But it's not, you know, a lot of people think, well, you have to have that at the start of the relationship, and it's like, no, I tell leaders, teams, employees, it is never too late to go back and have the what's going on, the how we work conversation. Right. We should be having those, even if we're a part of a team and we lose a few members, we got a few new members, we should always recalibrate, align. It's a powerful conversation and it should iterate over time. It should never be just a stagnant set of agreements.
Well, and again, you're empowering the team to genuinely be part of the team. You're not, hey, welcome to the team. You're falling into everything that we always do. No, we've got three new members. We lost three more. We're a new 12. Let's have a new conversation. Are we happy with the way we're doing it? Do y'all have any ideas from where you were? And again, dating at my age, we've all got different junk that we're bringing to the table. Let's start our own junk, you know? Yes. And I love that. And I say that to people in workshops because I'm like, if anything you hear today at this workshop is something you want to chat with your team, like, this workshop is a great springboard for a conversation. You can say, y'all, I was with this awesome redhead and she said this thing, and I think it'll really help us. Let's talk about it and see what you think. Because then you don't have to say, you guys are doing this wrong. You can instead say, let's get on the same page. What do you think about this? What do you think about us doing this? Then we're empowering our teams rather than wagging our fingers at them.
And when I hear, after I do this on a large stage speaking keynote, I will have individuals walk up to me at the end and say, Nicole, I really wish my leader knew about this. Like, if they only could master these conversations, my life would be so much easier. And my instant flip back to them is, you take this, you own it, you start the conversations. They can happen any way. Go model it for others. That's what you can do.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh. It's so, and I've always said that being on the same page, having the same expectations is the key, because so often, I mean, we're all different people. Somebody once said to me, and it blew my mind, they said, stop expecting you from other people. They have different assumptions, different ideas, different perspectives. They're going to be thinking different things, even though what you think you're thinking is perfectly logical, so is theirs. And so I love this, and especially you going back to Dave and saying, okay, like, how do we want to work together here? Because this is a new situation. I trust that you're an intelligent human being who wants to have a great time. You want me to have a great time. Same with me to you. So let's like get on the same page here. If we want to go hole up in the hotel room the whole time, let's go do that.
Yes.
Or whatever.
Yeah. Whatever. Whatever.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. So when's the book coming out?
Later. Okay. I'm going to say late summer, early fall.
Okay.
My editor will say has an exact date, but I'm a little nervous and it's aggressive. So let's say late summer, early fall.
Okay. And before that, you were going to say it sets the stage for what?
Oh, It sets the stage for the conversation Dave and I had. You know, we had it like day two of a 14-day excursion, which made the rest of the 12 days just pure heaven.
Right.
That's all.
And a lot of the things I've talked about on this podcast over the last couple months was my Kilimanjaro trip. I told people I was going beforehand, and I was going with two women, all very independent, 50-year-old, very mature, like, but the potential for conflict was high, you know, as you're in a different country and stuff's going wrong all around you and stuff's going right all around you, but you're climbing a damn mountain. I mean, we had a safe word and we did have that conversation. Like, how can I help you when you're having trouble? And when you say armadillo, we leave you alone. Like, we had that agreement. So, awesome. I mean, it worked out beautifully. Like you said, it sets the stage for a great relationship.
Nice.
Hallelujah. All right. So beginning of fall, we're looking for the book. So what other brave moves? Obviously communication is giant. And I would say a majority percentage of effective leadership, but what else is involved in the bravery required for bravership?
The top two. So in Small Brave Moves, I talk through the 9 mindsets, behaviors, and habits. And the ones that I see rising to the top right now that most people, the top three that are really leaning into and sharing stories with me back about, mm-hmm. is one, embracing uncertainty, right? Recognizing that, what are the things I can control? What are the things I can't? And how do I embrace uncertainty? And what does that look like as I move throughout situations and time? The next one is, because change isn't, and you know this, you're the change expert. Change is going to accompany us throughout our lives. And so we have a choice. The next one is hope-driven and really being intentional about having a hope-driven mindset. And that hope-driven mindset is having a positive expectation for a better future. And so the motivation to reach your desired outcome. So positive expectation plus your motivation to reach that desired outcome creates this hope-driven mindset.
Mm, I love it. And I think the way I word that in my keynote is, what happens if this goes well?
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Because I mean, we're so good at coming up with all the things that could go wrong and all the failures and all the things we've messed up in the past. And it's like, we forget to ask ourselves, wait a minute, what happens if this goes right?
Yeah.
And that is that kind of what you're talking about?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And approaching it, even it's so interesting. When I was doing research on the ask question, when people approach asking for something and they have a hope-driven mindset and they're positive in the ask, mm-hmm. and not nervous or negative or feeling like, oh, I want to make an ask, but they have this, I'm being positive about it. I've got a good energy about it. Mm-hmm. They find that people are more likely to say yes. People are more, even if they're going to say no to the request, they listen longer and find other ways to help them.
Mm.
All because of that mindset and that positivity in when they make the ask, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah. Well, and perfect example. Today, I went to an organization that I signed on for a big speaker training program with. And I wanted to ask them to take the money that I had put into their specific program and say, hey, can I take that money instead and you do a one-on-one with me? And like, so I was asking for a special thing and I recognized that. But I was like, they're going to recognize why I want to do this. I'm going to tell them why I want to do it and the value it's going to give me right now. And the conversation took 8 minutes. It was so easy. She was like, oh yeah, sure. Absolutely. We can do that. I was like, because I get all up in my pants about asking for things. I'm not good at it. Yeah. So that was a brave move for me.
That's awesome. And you're not alone in the, I'm not good at it and I'm scared to ask for it. Right. That's the majority of us. And the fact that so I'm curious, leading up to that question, leading up to that meeting, what did you do to prepare to get your mindset right with, you know, kind of getting ready for this, the big ask?
I role played it in my car. I did your frequency thing, right? I literally had, and I do this all the time. And this is how I know I'm stressed out about something. When I get in my car and immediately start having a fake conversation, like not even practicing or doing it intentionally. I just start working through it verbally. I'm sure, thank God for like hands-free phones now, because then people in traffic don't think I'm absolutely crazy and talking to myself. But I did. I had the conversation like 4 times before I got on the phone with her. about, you know, the benefits that it would give me and where I am with my business and what I needed and all that stuff. And again, it went really, really well, but I did exactly what you do in your trainings without even knowing it. Look at you unconsciously slipping that into my life.
Well, hey, I'm going to need that story for the upcoming book. That's a great story to add in for the ask.
Yeah.
It's a perfect example of asking for what you need.
Well, and as we're in training, as we think about small, brave moves, learning things, having the courage to suck at something first, how many times do you get either a groan or an eye roll in a training when you say, okay, we're going to do role playing?
Well, oh yeah, it's even better. So we, with the Tough Conversations, I have a workshop built out where we actually do a live simulation. The managers have no idea it's coming because the fear and anxiety would take over. Right. And so I go to break. And when they come back from break, the stage is being set for what's about to unfold for a 1 hour intense simulation where I have actors and actresses come in for these parts. And when I go to set up, like, okay, here's what we're going to do. The look, the same look that you've been giving me is the look that they have on their face. Their eyes are big. It's just this like, what? Oh my gosh. And then I jokingly like, hey, come on. Nobody wants to role play. Do you want to like, come on. Nobody's going to level up if we're just role playing and pretending to be parts. So you're going to go into a live simulation with professional Academy Award winning actors and actresses. So bring your A game. Let's do this. And they're like, okay.
Wow. At that moment, you are the most hated facilitator on the planet. But I'm sure afterwards.
Last week, I was doing this in St. Louis, and I, at the end of the session, you know, we say farewell to the Academy Award winning actors and actresses. And I walk back in the room, and two of the gentlemen say, Nicole, sit down. We'd like to have a tough conversation with you right now. And I'm like, wait, we're still friends, right? We're still good. Everybody's good. And they're like, yeah. And then of course, we begin to, process and breathe a bit from what we just experienced, but it was great. They're like, we need to have a tough conversation with you. And I was like, let's do this.
Now that you got your confidence in your frequency, you want to bring it to the streets.
Exactly. Don't bring that weak shit to the yard. Come on.
You're like, you're playing with a professional now. Come on. Let's go. Exactly. I just spent 6 weeks in Italy. I know. NicoleBianchi.com is the website, at Nicole Bianchi on all the social medias. Nicole, you're awesome. And I can't wait to read this book. Small Brave Moves is the book that's out right now. And what did you say, that five conversations of effective leadership?
Yeah, the five tough conversations for exceptional leadership.
Exceptional leadership. And I completely agree. I'm like all on board with these five questions. So look her up. Go check it out. Get the book when it's available. I'll put all those links in the show notes. Nicole, I assume the book when it's out is going to be, the new book is going to be available on the socials and all the places.
All of the places.
You're usually pretty good at promotion, so you can look for that. Thank you so much for your time and all of this intelligent insights. I'm so excited. People, go out there, have those brave conversations, start them off right. Nicole, you're the bomb. Wow. Thank you, Nicole Bianchi, for sharing the five, and I'm going to mess it up, those five amazing conversations to have in that order to set up the really hard ones to not be that hard. Oh my gosh. So get her book at the fall of 2023. It's just a couple months away. And I'm in her mastermind, so I will encourage her to finish writing that quickly so that we can get the information. But like, set the expectation of how we're going to work together, then making an ask, and then what's going on? Like, something doesn't seem right. And then the be better conversation. And then like, hey, let's just end this right now. But I love that. Oh my gosh, you guys. So thank you for listening. Thank you for, you know, investing in yourself and your ability to have these tough conversations, because I truly believe that in all aspects of our life, if we can nail the communication, we build the relationships, everything else falls into place, whether it's leadership, family, community, all the things. So get out there, communicate bravely. Small Brave Moves is the book. I'll put all the links and stuff in the show notes. Nicole is a phenomenal speaker. So if you need a speaker to come in and beef up your leadership, give her a call. And if you need somebody to come and help your team embrace the discomfort of change, my name is Ann Bonney. Yourchangespeaker.com is my website. Let's do this. Thanks for listening. We got some more great content coming next week. So make sure you subscribe. That was a noise I just made with my mouth. So make sure you subscribe, and I will talk to y'all next week. Thanks for listening.